James. So I'd like to talk about the recent developments in quarkonium physics, and in fact the surprises above threshold that have been found experimentally in the last about 10 years, starting with the X3872. Those surprises are two large hadronic transitions for existing CC bar quarkonium states to lower states, and new potential new sets of states, the XYZ states. So first I'll just say a word about how well everything worked below threshold, and then talk about above threshold, try to disentangle the XYZ states a little bit. It's very foggy. Many of the states only have one experiment that actually sees the state, and so and the quantum numbers may not be decided yet. So I'll try to stick to the well-established states first. And then you need a new dynamics for hadronic transitions above threshold. And I'll try to mention some from a phenomenological point of view where I think lattice would be most useful in this, to me at least. So a little ancient history. Quarkonium potential, the idea that heavy enough quarks and anti-quarks would move on a scale slow compared to the rearrangement of the light gluons, the light quarks and gluons, and so effectively act in a potential or a static, they would have feel a static energy at a given distance, and then you could use a Schrodinger equation to compute the behavior of states. That was the original potential models, Cornell and Richardson and other potentials. And in fact, just from the observation of these two states, the whole spectrum of charmonium, and in fact, when one discovered the lowest state of the BB bar system, the whole spectrum of bottomonium could be predicted with the same static energy, as well as the E1 transitions and M1 transitions that were in quite good agreement with what experiment eventually found. There are also a lot of single hadron transitions between states. I've only shown the hadron transitions here. These are somewhat more problematic even below threshold. That's what I'll discuss. The others seem to continue to survive even above threshold. There are still, of course, two undiscovered narrow states in the charmonium system, in the L equals 2 D system. And there are a total of 14 partially discovered or undiscovered states in the bottomonium system, including L equal angular momentum 3 and 4 states, which might be pretty hard to ever see, but one surprise of how much we've seen recently. So that so after the original predictions, people made models of the relativistic corrections and models of the effects of quark loops virtually in real. And in fact, by 1980, the whole thing had settled down, and very little happened until 2003. Well, actually 2002, when this state was seen by the, a new state was seen. But in 2003, the X3872 was seen. Models are great because with a few parameters, you can predict a lot. But of course, the lattice supersedes it because the lattice starts from fundamental QCD, and it's unlike a model, it's infinitely improvable. With more and more work, but can be arbitrarily improved a model once it has a behavior you don't know how to systematically correct. So in fact, now the low-lying charmonium states are quite well understood in the lattice, and this accuracy is much better at this point than these models could give. So now I want to talk a little about hadronic transitions below for states below threshold first, and then go on to the issues above threshold. So below threshold, there's something called the QCD multiple expansion. It works fairly well to describe hadronic transitions. The transition rates are very small. I guess you can't read this, because well, at least I can't. But I mean, this is, say, the 2s to 1s, psi 2s to 1s, pi pi transition is 102 keV. And the, say, the 3s to the epsilon 3s somewhere to 1s is 0.894 keV. So these are very, very small transition rates. And then you make heavy quark symmetry dictates that the leading transitions do not flip the spin of the heavy quark, as is usual in EM transitions of non-relativistic systems, as at E1, M1, et cetera, expansion, normal expansion of the quadrupole, multiple expansion. And with a few input parameters, you then predict in a model the behavior of the other transitions. And you can look at that table at your leisure. They're not great, but they're roughly OK. There are, however, a few remaining puzzles, even below threshold. But first, let me just, in a nutshell, give the QCD multiple expansion. It's simply the expansion of the Hamiltonian, including external chromoelectric and chromomagnetic fields, just as you do the usual multiple expansion for electric and magnetic fields. The leading term is dipole with the electric and a magnetic monopole, the magnetic moment with the B field. We always are making transitions from color singlets to color singlet states, which means that you need to, of course, emit at least two gluons to get back to a color singlet state. So this is a double expansion in E and M. So the leading lowest order, and these are in velocity, the lowest order is an E1, E1, and then an E1, M1, which flips the spin, and an E2, E1, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The picture is, crucial to this working, is that the heavy quark dynamics and light quark dynamics factor. That is, you can break the diagram into something happening in the heavy quark, taking initial state A to final state B and emitting gluons, and then the gluons hadronize. So this is just an expression of that. And what you put in between the emission of the two gluons is one of the ways in which, in addition to the wave function, initial and final state, is one of the ways that this is highly model dependent. And there's various models for trying to do this. For the light sector, one uses parameterizes using chiral effect of Lagrangians. So the simplest one, the first one seen, was the 2s to 1s pi pi. So in general, different s states have transitions by 2 pi. The E1, E1 dominates, so it looks like this. This has got two R's for the electric dipole transitions. And then the overlap of two chromoelectric fields with 2 pi. This is some quantity you have to calculate in that model, or just take as a parameter for each one of the states. And then this is given by chiral symmetry to have an S wave and a D wave piece. And if you just say it's dominantly S wave, as you expect, then this behavior up to one parameter is, in fact, was fit to the 2S to 1S Charmonium transition. OK? And you can actually measure the ratio of D to S as a function of the this is the invariant pair mass of the pions as a function of the invariant pair mass of pions. And in the region where it's large, it's dominantly S wave. This, of course, because this is true for the 2s to 1s in the CC bar system, it must be true as well in the BB bar system by heavy quark symmetry. And in fact, here is the same thing. Works very well. However, there are some puzzles, and the puzzle is most notably the 3s to 1s transition looks like this in the invariant mass of the pair of pions. Nothing like you'd expect from the S wave. People have studied this and in detail, and so far there's no really convincing explanation of why that happens. There are two sort of general explanations. One is that a dynamical cancellation of the out of these wave functions between of this operator between these two states. This happens in the 3s to 1s E1 transitions between the 3s to 1p photonic transitions. Just because of overlap issues, the wave functions, the integral doesn't have has almost there's since it's a node in these states. Nodes in these states, then the overlap can in fact be small. And in fact, it happens in radiative transitions for the same two states. Maybe it's related to that. There's also the possibility it involves the final state interactions of the pions. But in either case, this is a puzzle. If you go to the 4s to 1s in the BB bar system, looks okay. The 4s to 2s, again, though, with where I skip by two units of radio quantum number, has the same strange behavior as this does. So anyway, this is a puzzle which, as far as I know, is not yet resolved.
SD and E, not having the particle data book here, can you remind us what the pi invariant masses are?
They go up. This is the endpoint, which is about 560 MeV.
That's the two.
For this one. And for this one, it's about, I think, around 900 or so. So if there are resonances, you could imagine, might be in the pi-pi in solar. In fact, maybe the F980 is involved in this behavior as well as the sigma. So it's not totally clear. That would be these. People have tried to have mimicked this with just this, but I'm not sure what the answer is yet. The real problem is the eta transitions. The eta transitions should be related to the single pi transitions because of SU3, associated with SU3 breaking by quark, like quark masses. And there's a whole explanation of how that should be, but there is something which you'd expect to be true in a QCD multiple expansion. The E1 M2 dominates the eta transitions, and that is got the same structure when you take the spin out as the E1 transition of 2 pi. So by taking the ratio and putting this element, replacing it by some unknown constant in the appropriate momentum behavior, the ratio of eta to 2 pi transitions with the same initial and final states at pi-pi mass equal to the mass of the eta is in fact predicted to be just this ratio of constants and some kinematic factor. Now, if you look at reality, this is not the way it was originally done, but I've used the BB bar system 2 to 1 state to get the ratio coefficients between these two processes, and this is the answer. And then if you look at the rate of eta to pi pi in all the other cases, for the 2s to 1s in the CC bar, it's 30 times what this model should say. In the this one is we don't know yet. For the 4s to 1s, 5s to 1s, and 5s to 2s, it's 1,000, 2,000, and 300 times what you'd expect. Clearly, this fails miserably to explain the eta transitions. And I'll come to that. You could note that these transitions are near and above threshold, either above in this case or very near threshold in this case. And so the might have the violation of SU3 symmetry could be large, as I'll explain in a minute.
So these big factors, do they suggest that the statement at the top that the E1N2 dominates can't be right?
No, well, that's none of the others give big factors in any case, right? In velocity expansion, they're all the other ones are the same order. So no, what I'll show you what it will. It suggests that the SU3 braking mechanism has got another very large contribution as you get to threshold. So why does it work? Why does that simple model work so well below threshold? And I'm talking about in general, but even for the multiple expansion, it's because it's transitions between tightly bound four conium states. These states are tightly bound in the bottom system, and these in the charm system. So that means there are small contributions from involving QCD additional degrees of freedom. And this is essential to the factorization assumption that the heavy quark states in the intermediate state remain separated from the light degrees of freedom. Above threshold, we know this fails because light quark pairs begin to give thresholds of two heavy light meson pairs. And that happens in the 1D already, and the 3S region, the rest of them come in. And in the BB bar, in the 4S region, this is visible. Also, of course, even if I take the static approach, there's excitation of the string. So you can measure these other potentials besides the ground state potential. And at some point, those will have states without, if it didn't have decay to light quarks, these states would also appear in the spectrum once I got above this threshold. And that's somewhere between the 3S and 4S in the CC bar system and about the 5S in the BB bar system. So clearly, this suggests there will be a new mechanism for hadronic transitions. And much of the disentanglement of the states for of the idea that these XYZ states were, we saw cases where we had large hadronic transitions which were totally unexpected from what our experience was below threshold. So let me just say something about this. The most obvious effect of the DD bar states in the charmonium, for example, and that's, you can see it in the resonances in R. As these channels open for decay of the CC bar state, instead of extraordinarily narrow states, you begin to get resonances. And this is the 3S, that's the 1D, 3S, 2D, 4S. And after a while, you don't see any more resonances. And that's simply because, and this is the prediction of, I think, third order QCD. So eventually it becomes, the R just looks smooth like you'd expect from perturbative QCD, but the resonance region is in here. Similarly for the B system, you have the 4S, which is just above threshold. And then you have structures which denote the 5S and 6S here. And then these are much smaller effects because of the charge. But in fact, it probably pretty much becomes flat after that. There's one more state that hasn't been seen. But you'd expect it to flatten out. So these are the real effects of having decay channels, two meson decay channels. Well, how were they modeled? As I say, they were modeled long ago. You can just imagine two pictures of R. One is, of course, perturbative QCD, which works very well as you get somewhat above the threshold region. But in the threshold region, you'd imagine that a good set of physical states to put in to understand the behavior of R would include, or any current-current correlator would involve the original QQ bar states, maybe some QQ bar hybrid states, and loops involving heavy virtual heavy mesons. And this is a more appropriate phenomenological approach near the threshold region. Now, of course, the lattice includes the whole thing, starting from QCD in the whole region. So it's, in principle, has all these effects in it. Here is the already observed heavy light states. And so these give you the pairs of these and give you the low-lying thresholds in BB bar and CC bar. There are 9 charm meson states that are quite narrow and 10 bottom meson states, 2 of which still are to be observed, but are known from the lattice. And the wide states, some have high widths in the P state. All the ground states are narrow. Some of the P states are narrow and others are wide. The wide ones can be relevant, as I'll discuss later. If you were to make a model, which people have done, including myself, of the quarkonium to DD bar, say, transitions, then you need a form factor for the transition. And you need, therefore, a model of pair creation of light quarks. Those models, there are a couple on the market, but they both have quantum numbers still plus plus for the light quark, so the 3P0 model in terms of quantum numbers. So the 1S to DD star, for example, is a P wave. And it looks like what you expect from meson decays for light quarks, for light systems above threshold. And here's the 1S to a P wave, D1, and the ground state D. All these are the invariant amplitudes. So for a heavy quark multiplet of heavy light mesons, the amplitudes are all the same in the same multiplet, but since they have different masses, they're at different momenta at a given energy. But if you go to the radio excited states, which are in fact for the quarkonium states, the first states that are above threshold, then these decay amplitudes have very much more structure. This is the 3s to dd star. This is the 4s to d1 d or d star. And here, for example, if you were to model it by the, it's an s wave, so by a flat constant, you don't get very far before that's a poor model of the behavior. So in particular, if you're trying to do loops of mesons and use a constant vertex with a threshold behavior, you're going to be quite wrong for these states, which is what people often do. So I showed you the 3S peak in R. It looks kind of smooth. But if you break it up into individual channels, this is D, D star, this is D, D, and this is D star, you see that each individual channel has significantly different behavior as a function of energy to make up this whole. This particular model doesn't completely fit because it doesn't have charm p states in the as final states, but in fact you see that these actually were predicted behaviors before the observation of the individual channels. So it does fairly well, but of course it's just a model. So in addition to the real decay, at threshold region, heavy light meson loops have virtual effects. They shift masses and properties of states near threshold. Because the lowest quarkonium states feel more the Coulombic interaction or the perturbative interaction, they are least affected by the large loops. In fact, lattice calculations, some of which are already in hand, could provide very valuable information about this phenomenology of meson loop effects. The variation of quarkonium masses as a function of light quark masses when those Lightbrook masses are less than typically a QCD scale, then it's directly related in these models to meson loop contributions. So in fact, and you would see that in the variation of the more excited states with light quark masses as I change the light quark mass from the physical values up to, say, the strange quark or even above the strange quark. So this is actually, this effect can be predicted in these various models, and it can actually be measured by looking at the masses as a function of the pion mass for pions which are above and equal to the physical mass. So the big quenching effect, big effect of unquenching is partly the running of alpha changes, and partly at, for the light masses already light, it's the loop effects that are changing the structure. So you can actually disentangle this from what's already, I think, already in the data. I haven't done it yet. Maybe somebody can help me with it. And as I said, the couplings are independent of the particular meson in the loop within a heavy quark multiplet up to known Clebsch-Gordan coefficients that come from heavy quark symmetry. And they're approximately SU3 invariant as well. I showed those plots with two colors. One was with a strange quark and one was with the light quarks. So therefore, SU3 breaking and heavy quark symmetry breaking in quarkonian masses and transitions are induced by the mass splittings of the physical heavy light mesons themselves to a large extent. These effects are only large in the relevant, near the relevant threshold. For example, isospin could only be important in the X3872, nowhere else. And the SU3, of course, is rather large, so that's important in the whole region. Okay, now let me turn to the states. That's, in a way, a preamble, a half hour of a preamble. And let me discuss the XYZ states. Okay. The notation, and pretty much the notation of the PDG, but not necessarily the notation of all the people who wrote the original papers, experimental papers, discovering it, are that Y states are observed directly in charm contributions E plus E minus hadrons. So they have JCP PC of 1 minus minus and I equals 0. Samples of this are Y sub C 4260, 4360, and 4650, all of which have been firmly established by a number of experiments. So I'll talk about one of them. The Z denotes states with I spin 1. So that's in the B system, that's the Z plus and its partners 10.61 GV and 10.65 GV, and in the charm system, these two. And then there is a charged one seen in B decays, which I won't talk about, maybe at the end they will. X is the X3872 and anything else. In the PDG notation, anything which doesn't have definite quantum numbers is thrown at X. Isn't yet established. And of course, recently there's been a suggestion of pentaquark, which I will only speak about if asked a question about at the end. Here are the PDG table. I'll let you look at it. Pretty much I put every one of the states which are well established in the first slide. So the rest either have only one experiment that's seen it, or more than one experiment that disagree on whether it's a state or not. So we'll focus on the ones which are clearly observed. The Y4260, I'll start with, because it may be the odd man out on this. The 4260 is not a standard charmonium state. We know that definitely because it has 1 minus minus quantum numbers. And here's its mass, and here's its width. And it was discovered in the J psi pi pi mode. It does not appear as a bump in R. and all the 1 minus minus states in the tramonium spectrum in that region are already identified. So we have an additional state that is so we know it's not a standard tramonium state. These are the decays that are already known. There are many models of this. That's a hybrid. That's a D1D molecule, hydrotramonium, tetraquark, that is some combination of color spins of a relatively tightly bound system with 4 quarks, unlike not the one that is sort of a loosely bound molecule of near color singlets. That this is, in fact, some Casper non-resonance behavior that's always there as an alternative. The lattice results from hadronic spectroscopy suggest the possibility that this is, in fact, a hybrid. You can, as I said, even without quark groups, you can have a hybrid spectrum in addition to a QQ bar spectrum. And the hybrid with the right quantum numbers sits here in their 24-cube lattice. And they're near the 4S. It's not quite at the right spot, but it's somewhat encouraging that this is what it is. Heavy quark symmetry tells you what to expect as you go from the CC bar system to the BB bar system. So in fact, you have a static energy for this first excited string excitation, and so you can compute the excited states in that spectrum without quark loops. And if you do that, you conclude that the hybrid state should be around 10, 6, 8, 70 MeV in the BB bar system, the same state. That's actually kind of unfortunate because it's pretty close to where the 5S is, so disentangling that might be somewhat of a problem, but that's what it says. If it's at the threshold of B1B in the model here, then it's at 1100 MeV. A nice dip in the curve of R. And if it's hadrotramonium, then there are two effects. One is that the BB bar is more deeply bound than the CC bar. But the binding of the light system to the heavy system, because the heavy system has less extent, might be reduced. So it's hard to actually, I don't have a number for what I expect here, but maybe somebody else does. Okay, let's turn to the original state that was discovered, the X. I'm leaving the Z because it involves hadronic transitions too. The X3872 is now established to have is a 1++ state. Its mass is very well known. Its width, if you measure it from the J psi pi pi mode, is less than 1.2 MeV. Its decay is seen into pi pi J psi through the rho mainly. There is some omega slightly off shell omega decays. And there are D star D decays if you look at the behavior just at threshold above. And most importantly, there is a photon psi 2s transition. There's some disagreement in experiments up till now on that, whether you see it, you don't see it, whether it's an upper bound, or whether you see it at a rather large effect. LHCb has a new result, which says that this ratio is 2.46 plus or minus 0.64 plus or minus 0.29. This is exactly what you'd expect if it was just a standard 2p state. So the fact that the psi 2s photon is actually bigger than the J psi, even though there's much more phase space for this, is the expectation because of the wave function overlaps you'd expect in a p state. So in fact, this suggests that there's probably a significant contribution, at least of the 3P1, the 3P12 radio excited state. However, the mass of the X minus the mass of the D star and the mass of the D is So that's, this is a negative means binding here, is 0.11 plus or minus 0.23 experimentally. So right at threshold within error. Maybe bound if you can take the central value. So this is suggests clearly a molecule. How else would you get so close to that threshold? So of course there are two primary models. The first model is that it's a 2p state, which actually almost everything you need to ever know was in a paper by Suzuki in 2003, unpublished, I guess, because it probably had trouble with referees. Who knows? And the D0 bar star has a whole list. The molecule has a huge list of people who have contributed to that.
Is that also a list of candidate referees for Suzuki?
I don't know. Maybe one of these early ones were, yes. I don't know what happened to it. I should ask him whatever happened to his paper, why it didn't publish it. Or it doesn't appear as published anyway. And so it's likely a mixed state. Here I actually would like the Lattice QCD to do as best a job they could as looking for the P0 state. Because there is an identification of the 3P0, the 2-3P0 state, the chi C0 prime, in the PDG, but it's because, which is very close to the J equals 2 P state. It would be surprising if that were true, but it could be. Otherwise, you'd expect it to be below, considerably below. And if you just took naive expectations without the coupling to the effects of the loops, you'd expect it to be significantly below the X3872. And if it were near a threshold of D0 bar, then you might see a similar state in that. We don't see such a state, but it would be very nice to look at that. I know there are some calculations already, but a really good job of that would be very useful. Above threshold, the X3872 in beta case has a D0 star. This is the behavior near threshold. You see it peaks strongly at threshold. This is what you'd expect for a threshold behavior of an S wave in general, but it's even stronger than that, suggesting that there's some kind of strong binding or strong force between them, at least qualitatively. Now, lattice calculations actually see in this case that there is a state just below threshold. These are preliminary calculations from a number of groups. And they see a state in the I equals 0 channel, like the X3872 would be. It's somewhat a little bit below threshold, but of course they're far from the physical values of everything at this point. In order for this to happen, though, it requires both a D and the CC bar components. If you remove the CC bar, even if you include 4 quark components, you can't get this state, which is interesting. There may be various reasons for that. It suggests, again, from lattice, that there's a significant contribution of the 2p state in the X3872. And no poles observed in the I equals 1 channel, but of course, there's no isospin breaking in these models, so that is not too surprising. So here are those models, and here are the various masses that they get. So here the question is, one question you might ask is, what about when I go to the B system? Well, there would be the equivalent. So this would be an XB 10.604 meson right at threshold, or maybe a little more bound, less bound. Well, it won't be less bound if it's a bound state, but maybe slightly below this. I think the answer is almost certainly no, because, well, first, if you're looking for it, you need to look. There's no isospin breaking because the B0 and B plus are almost totally degenerate. So even at this close to it, there's very small effects of isospin breaking. So you need to look for X goes to omega epsilon 1s. And the 3B, the equivalent 3B, the three-piece state is 75 MeV below the threshold. And with a width of less than an MeV, it doesn't play, it won't play much of a role in the behavior at this point. So this state is probably significantly, is totally decoupled from the threshold behavior. So I guess I would not expect an analog in the bottom system. We'll see. Experiment will tell the answer in the end. Okay, now let me turn to hadronic transitions, and this will be involved in the Zs. There's tremendous amount of new details of hadronic transitions in these experiments. We need a clearer understanding of hadronic transitions for the Quarconium-like states, and it should be possible, but there are many questions. The QCD multiple expansion fails above threshold. Why and how? What are the remaining constraints of heavy quark symmetry? What explains the large rate of transitions of some of these states above threshold? Can the pattern transitions be understood? Can detailed predictions be made? Okay. If I look at the, I'm going to start, I probably won't get beyond the bottom system, except for one case. I'll look at the Upsilon 4S, which is just above threshold. So the only nearby, this is 10 MeV, the only nearby state is B0, and it, or the B bar states. And there's no isospin breaking. These are the differences in thresholds. You can see less than half an MeV, about half an MeV. There's a normal pattern of two pi decays. In fact, this is the rate, partial rate, not a surprising number. Mm. However, the eta transition, which was supposed to be 10 to the minus 3 of the pi-pi transition rates at the appropriate point, are significantly bigger than the pi-pi transition rate. And this can be attributed to the large isospin breaking, I mean not isospin breaking, the large SU3 breaking in the masses of I didn't put it on this transmission, but large mass, the large splitting about 100 MeV between the B star, between the B S and the B. So, and in fact, you see that only the BS virtual loop, sorry, the BB virtual loop is a significant contributor to the 4S and not the other states. So so that, I think, explains qualitatively that, and quantitatively you can actually make a model that does that. But now let's address the question of what remains of heavy quark symmetry, because this will turn out to be an important question when we go to the 5S. The J equals 1 minus minus state can be written of, you can think of it as various heavy quark states with the heavy quark spin in one, the two heavy quark spins of the, as a 1 or a 0. And you need to get the right quantum numbers. And then you lump everything else into light plus angular momentum of the heavy quarks. And that's JSLB, which is the light quark J plus the angular momentum of the CC bar state, which in this case is 0. So these are the, you can then write the spin combination. So if I assume spin is conserved, then when I go from a heavy quark state with certain spin, a heavy quark and anti-quark and certain spin combination, to various states of B, B star, and B star, B star, it will be a mixture of those states that give you the specific spin. It's just Clebsch-Gordan coefficient. So in fact, we are writing that the other way. The B state is some mixture of the various heavy quark spins in the decomposition for this total quantum numbers, heavy and light. So these are the coefficients. And so you see that if you only have the BB bar, then there is a coefficient, there is a transition which is to the spin zero part in the heavy quark sector. There's a coefficient for that. And I should have said that, I guess, before. Oops. Yeah. This transition is violating SU3, but this transition also violates spin. It's a spin flip of the heavy quarks. So, and this is also very large. Okay. So, this is a way to recover the effects of heavy quark spin. You project the final states in, you project into the combination of final states that preserve spin, and then, of course, you recombine it into the physical final states, which, in fact, then, because they have different masses, will give different contributions. And this is the way the spin symmetry is violated. In other words, the spin is preserved, but when I form the B as opposed to the B star, then I get a, to make a B, I have to flip, I have certain combinations of spin in one direction and spin in the other direction for the heavy quark. So that's this. And so you, you preserve, you, this gives you a mechanism to predict what these various, what the various contributions will give. And you can do the same thing for I equals one. And as I said, I didn't, I went out of order and talked about SU3 first, but again, SU3 is there's small breaking associated with the variation of the SU3 breaking in the quark masses, but there's also this large variation associated with the splitting of the D, S, and D. Okay. This leads to large effects in the threshold region, and this is essentially why all the eta transitions are greatly enhanced. If you're near or above threshold, and that's for the 2S and for all these states above. And it will have effects in other places where SU3 symmetry forbids the decay. Okay, so now let's talk about the final thing that I guess I'll have time to talk about, which is the 5S hadronic transitions. Here we have ground states open, all the ground state, the, these ground states are open, and the P states are not open, they're above threshold, but some of the P states are very wide. And the wide ones, of course, can still contribute to, and so these, in fact, if I say these states have the J light equals 1/2 plus states, 0 and 1, are about 300 MeV wide. And the 3/2 plus, which are 1 and 2 of the P states, are narrow. So in fact, the wide ones can actually be a decay product of the 5S. And in fact, you'd expect it to be a very significant decay product of the 5S. Here's just graphically this. Now, if you ask, well, what channels are open in general, here is just all the BB bar narrow thresholds up to this scale. And here's some narrow wide thresholds, and the 5S sits here. So it's below these narrow ones, and therefore doesn't have much contribution to that. It would be interesting to look at the 6S in the Upsilon system, because that's in the region where you start to see these narrow states for direct decays. But in fact, here it has, here are the transitions that you see. Again, this is 0.29 MeV for this transition. Huge. Remember that in the 3S to 1S transition was 0.9 keV. And these are the other, some of the others. And here's the transition that to omega and X, the P states, and dominantly this. And here are the eta transitions, again, very large. So here we have very large pionic transitions. This is the first time we've seen that. And large eta transitions, which we've already seen. if you look at the pi-pi transitions and then look at what recoils against the one of the pi's, then the other pi and the final state, which is either a singlet p state or a triplet s state, have peaks, and those peaks are these masses. So there are two peaks. These are the z plus 10.61 and z plus 10.65. These, since they have isospin 1, would have to, if they're real states, have to be associated with four quarks. But this is right at B star threshold, and this one's right at B star threshold. So what is likely happening here? Here's just a plot of that behavior of these near threshold, and you see they peak near the right at the thresholds. The ratio of this to BB bar and this state to B star, BB star, meaning this state to B star, overall the hadronics are it's still bigger, but not immensely bigger. So what's happening here? Well, what's happening, I think, is that what's really happening is that this is the contribution of the p-state decays. In other words, the s-state can decay to a j equals 1/2 p-state, and a singlet and a ground state s-state d meson, or b meson in this case, with these coefficients, the lowest p-state and lowest and the pseudoscalar don't have a coupling, but the others do. And that's in an S wave, so it should be strong, okay? But these are wide states. And so what happens is this is the decay of the 5S, but this thing very quickly decays into a pion and produces a pion, and the B star, B1 decays to a pion and a B star, the B0 to a pion and a B. So I end up with, in this situation, a B and a B star, or a B star, with a near threshold in a relative S wave. And with, as we know, these have, so we have, in fact, we expect that there is some fairly significant interaction, or at least a cusp, for an S wave near threshold. So you've associated with, it's associated production of this with the pion that then rescatters, if you wish, into a pion and one of the possible final states. There's no way to get a BB because this decay doesn't have a B0 to B. So there's no way for B0 to then give a pi B. So the only way I could get a BB bar is if this had a B. This is not allowed. So, in fact, it explains why there are two, not three such things, as you'd expect. And it's all S wave, so it should be fairly strong. And in fact, this, since time is getting short, this you can generalize into a factorization, a new factorization contribution to transitions, where you don't factorize along the heavy and light, but along the heavy-light pair meson near threshold. So in the case that I was discussing, you had an initial 5S state, which because of the wide B, P wave meson decay gives me a light hadron. This may or may not be what happens in general. And then I get two ground state heavy light systems in an S wave near threshold. And then they could have large rescattering to another light quark, recombination of it into light quarks and heavy quarks. And we don't really need to speculate whether this is a threshold or whether this is some threshold effect caused or a dynamical effect, or in fact it's a resonance. I'm not sure Lattice has much to say yet about this, but I think it's so far it's no evidence for there actually being a resonance here, but I'm agnostic about it. This is just the mechanism by which you produce this state which you need to have the factorization and large effects. This is an argument that has to be a resonance, which I don't agree with. So then you can just break up the various kinds of production modes that you could have to give this. Then these, and so these are the new factorization. And so what I need to know then to do this is there needs to be a large rescattering probability into light hadrons from S wave ground state mesons scattering. They have to be near threshold and nearby in position for there to be much overlap for this to happen. For direct decays, there could be this can happen because you're right near that threshold. For sequential decays, you first get some strong interaction which produces a pion, and then, or some other state if it were some other excited state. And then you get essentially the same thing to study with this rescattering. So in fact, this is very interesting because I need only look at threshold behavior, S-wave threshold behavior of ground state mesons scattering into both elastically and into quarkonium plus light hadrons. So if I could compute this ratio, then I could say how well that I could then predict these transition rates from this mechanism. The other part is strong dynamics, which there's models for, which work pretty well. But this I don't have. I can use the heavy quark symmetry and even SU3 approximate symmetry to study it in detail. It's going the wrong way. Well, let me say, here we are. Finally, let me say one thing about the charm, one more thing about the charm system. Heavy quark symmetry again tells me that if I have this mechanism in the 5S of the upsilon system, and I have a P state, the same P states available in a similar situation in the charm system, then I should get the same mechanism in the charm system. And in fact, these two states are nothing more than exactly that happening. And here the P states are somewhat lower, so the D wave charmonium state, the 2D state with quantum numbers 1 minus minus, this whatever this state is at 4260, and the 4S state are all in the region where this mechanism works. And so in fact you would expect to see at threshold the same sort of enhancement that you see in the B system. That's exactly what you see, and this is just a constant with similar ratios of hadronic transitions to DD bar final states, and this is just what you see in the charm system. So this is just heavy quark symmetry at work, nothing more. It has to happen, and in fact it does. Okay, I won't say any more about these states because time is nearly up. Let me just say that the spectrum in for the D, here's the spectrum of charm mesons pairs in the DB biases in the charm system, and you see it's pretty messy already at the 4S. So there's much maybe to learn still there. I won't go on. Okay. I don't have much to say about what happens at heavy light mesons with strange thresholds. There should be enhancements for strange heavy light meson pairs production, leading, should there be such ones, leading to sizable production of single eta's and phi's and light hadrons. That there should be. But there are no wide P states for the strange system. So that mechanism I talked about is unavailable. It might be available if you go to the 2S, the 2SD state, but that's, that could possibly provide such a mechanism to produce the charge states, but I don't, there's none here. So there's no sequential transitions for these states in the ones that we can observe. And the DS, DS star, and DS thresholds, D, D star, and D, are far away from the 3P. So in fact, there doesn't seem to be any analog of the, it's not obvious it's an analog of the X3872 here. Could there be direct transitions with these as virtual contributions? I don't know. So I think we have to wait to see whether what experiments tells us about the strange case, but it isn't clear that it will be the same. Okay. That was 4430. Let me summarize. Near threshold, the effects of heavy light meson loops on corponium transition are pronounced. Hadronic transition rates are much larger than usual multiple expansion. And the SU3 breaking and heavy quark symmetry violations seen in those transitions are induced by the heavy light meson mass differences of nearby thresholds to a large extent. The assumption of factorization into heavy and light, of course, fails here because you have the dominant intermediate state involves heavy light, near threshold, that can last a long time. So you need a new mechanism which dynamics factors differently, and it's proposed. Heavy quark symmetry as well, the SU3 and chiral symmetry expectations are recovered for the amplitudes once you take this into account. Magnetic transitions are not suppressed, and the puzzle of the eta transitions are resolved. The known X and Z states are associated with threshold S wave scattering of these narrow states. Whether or not this is a, results in a bound state is something that we think might be true for the X, but don't know for the Z. And the Y may very well be a hybrid state. That would be very exciting, I guess, if that were true. You certainly expect to see them. It's pretty wide, so I don't know how wide to expect them to be, but that's obviously with BES3, LHCb, and soon BEL2 coming on, I expect a lot more progress as you increase, as we went orders of magnitude in luminosity of these systems, we saw structures we couldn't easily see before. In fact, from 1980 until 2000, for 20 years, essentially nothing happened in charmonium or quarkonium spectroscopy because we hadn't reached a level where we could begin to see these finer structures. And lattice QCD can play an important role. The two that I'd like to see particularly, I mentioned a number along the way, is I really would like to see you calculate the, or use the data that you already have to look at this quarkonium spectrum as you move the light quark masses from the physical value up to, say, lambda QCD or the strange quark mass, and see how the mass, how the spectrum changes as you do that, because this actually provides model-independent insight into the role of these light meson loops for states below threshold and above threshold, and calculate the behavior of heavy light pairs near threshold, S-wave amplitudes, including mixing between two heavy light mesons and a quarkonium and a single hadron. In particular, the coupling, the fraction of the decays, a fraction of the interactions in which the heavy light system at near threshold ends up in a charmonium plus light hadron compared to just scattering is very interesting to do all these, to disentangle all the hadronic transitions. And we can use heavy quark spin symmetry and proximate SU3 symmetry to greatly simplify this task. Initial progress is very encouraging in this direction, but there's a lot to do still here.
questions?
How energetic is the pion or the light hadron in these transitions? So if you have a single.
It's probably fairly energetic. Well, it depends on the particular state and what the heavy core, heavy quark state is. But you know, if it's if the upsilon 1s, and you're talking about BB bar, then it's very energetic. It's an energetic pion.
This may be quite difficult.
That might be hard, but you could do other things in pions in principle. Because I talked about the 5s, which is in fact sort of model for these things, but you can also see. You could see this kind of thing happening in BDKs and various other places where you have a different initial state. And so you can get the different quantum numbers, and you could get other states besides the, which are heavier, besides the pion. So, yeah. Well, you can do this. You can do the 3s. It's considerably less energetic pion. Any one of them would be fine.
Yeah. Actually, I have a few questions.
Sure.
Maybe some of us, I may ask you offline.
Okay.
But, one for now, could you go back to slide 5?
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm going the wrong direction.
Yeah. You can look at those at your leisure, too. There's a way to, I should do this in a more sensible way.
Yeah.
So fairly, just as maybe a naive question. So the diagrams you drew with the two gluons.
Yeah.
So the two gluons are drawn to conserve color.
Yes.
So I had a long discussion of this with both Robert Fleischer and Uwe Nierst.
Yes.
And so their statement is the following. You know, when you draw a diagram like that, it's denoting that there are two hard gluons. You know, flagging gluons like that imply they are hard gluons. And what they both say is that really the color quantum numbers are being conserved by the soft gluon field rather than hard gluons. So they think that the traditional way, you know, again, this is what I was taught when I was a grad student, you know, and you find it in Perkins and everywhere else, you know, that to draw these, you know, two gluons conserving color, it is in their modern way of looking at things is not really right. It's a little bit misleading, and
well, there are issues associated with this. I would agree with that. This is the idea that these essentially are embedded and free and not and with reasonable momenta to begin with. And that the idea of this intermediate state being an octet, but still makes sense for a short period of time. It's hard to imagine that the gluon isn't somehow associated with that. So, yeah, I agree. This is the assumption. Okay, that it doesn't mean it's. It seems to work. There isn't really. I don't know any. This is a nice way to do it, but I don't know. But in the case, I would say the 4s to 1s, which of course is much bigger than the pion is okay. There's quite high momentum in these gluons. So yeah, for some of them, they only share about 500 or 600 MeV of momentum between them.
This came up because...
It's not ultra soft.
Right, okay, right. But actually, so this came up, we were trying to figure out how to draw a Feynman diagram for, you know, color suppressed QCD penguin diagram, you know, where the gluons are soft, or beta pi eta or something like that, and that's where we got it. It was not obvious exactly how to draw that, so that's where it came up. So one other question,
yeah.
Let's see, on slide 21. So, remind me again If there's a 10600, the analog of the 3872.
Yeah.
So why can't it go to Upsilon Pi Pi?
Yeah, it can go to Pi Pi, but without ISO spin breaking.
Right, without
ISO spin breaking. It's not a row, right.
It could go to Upsilon Pi Pi, right?
Yeah, but if you want to look for a single state, you can do this. It can.
Other questions?
No, when we are here, actually, I had a question on the next slide.
Yeah.
Can you just go over this again?
Not that one.
You can go back. I was just wondering, so this what's the final conclusion of current lattice studies about this one, about X13?
Well, there are lattice experts, too. I don't think there's a final conclusion about lattice studies at this point.
Okay, current.
But the current, somebody can correct me when I'm wrong. The current understanding is that the isospin 0, 1, plus, plus, seems to have a state slightly below threshold that could be the X3872. There's no evidence for I equals 1, but that's not too surprising unless you have isospin breaking problem. There's no evidence for a strange version of that. That's a current state. That doesn't mean it won't change if many things improve, but that's where it stands today.
Other questions?
But I think one important point in the end is that to get that, you seem to need the CC bar state nearby. So that puts into question whether you'll get that same mechanism where there isn't a CC bar state, like I equals 1 channels, or other channels where you don't have a nearby quarkonium state. I don't know, but they'll help us determine that.
So the state seems to be, you said at the beginning, the first ideas were that it would be a 2p charmonium, where it would be a molecule, but it seems like everything learned since then is that it looks a bit like this guy, and it looks a bit like that guy.
Exactly. So it's some mixture. But I mean, we know that the state will have, this quantum mechanics. So you don't have just a CC bar. You're going to have light quark pairs, and if you're near threshold, they can get far away from one another into charm mesons near those thresholds, and so virtually it's a DD star some significant fraction of the time of the state, and so then the only real question is whether there's an actual second state that's bound or a resonance that comes from it as a second one. Oh, there's only one. If there's only one, there's no, you're arguing about nothing. There, of course, there is a contribution from DD star.
So in the -011 MeV, plus or minus 120.
Well,
what is the main uncertainty source?
Okay, somebody who's actually done it should, if there's anyone here, is going to fall. But I mean, first, these are at, 200 and one of them at least, this one, I think, was a 260 MeV pion mass, and that may be relevant. I think this one doesn't have strange quark loops in it. I don't know if that's relevant. There are a number of systematics in addition to these error bars. Actually, I'm not sure if these error bars, what is included in those error bars.
The number you quoted was an experimental,
no? The number is 0.1 MeV, 0.1 MeV.
Minus.
Well, plus and minus 0.2.
Yeah.
Okay, so plus.
What is the main source of uncertainty? So there are three quantities.
Oh. It's the it's the D mass or D star mass. The difference is well known, but the D and D star masses are somewhat less well known than the than the actual X. So
there.
It would be nice to reduce that, but it's a lot of work has gone into getting it to that level of accuracy, obviously.
Is there an experimental way to decide if it's positive or negative?
Well, you can see what depends. Every time we've improved the experiment, the central value has gotten closer to 0.2. So I don't know. I think even if it stays at this, it would be very difficult, if not, it would be far in the future that the error would get down to where you could unambiguously say that this was bound or not bound experimentally. And it could be that when you look at the central value, it shifts. If it shifts down, then it would be easier. Certainly not possible now, I don't think.
The problem is with the D star or the D? Is the problem with the D star because of the soft pion?
You're the experimentalist. I think it's D, but it might be the D. I think it's not the mass difference, but it's the mass, but I might be wrong.
Question?